We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The baseball season is go, go, go. It's nonstop, relentless for every night, six straight months, and then hopefully another month in October. You also have work, friends, family, and a million other things going on. That's when you reach for a Coors Light. It's made to chill. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. I mean, the mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Is there anything better than opening up your refrigerator after a long day, seeing that icy cold Coors Light can or bottle in your fridge? The answer is no, there's nothing better. That's why when it's time to chill, you choose Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So that's why when you want to hit reset, reach for a beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 519. I don't know, maybe you guys listened to the live stream we put out on Monday morning. It was from our locker room stream that we did over the weekend during the Yankees game. If you guys did listen to it, awesome. Appreciate that. If you didn't, and you don't want to listen to live streams because those can be a little convoluted. I think, well, Scott, did we get around to like the Sylvester Stallone over the top movie towards the end of that? Like A-Rod's relationships were coming into play. So obviously the topics get off track pretty quickly on those, but we did talk some Yankees for at least half of it.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good mixed bag, man. I really enjoy them because it gives us an opportunity to talk to just more people. It's not just you that I'm talking to. Which is, you know,
that's wrong with just talking to me.
It's just a little refreshing. You know, it's just someone else disagreeing with me than other than you. It's fine. I can fight for the things that I say with other people. It keeps me sharp. I like it. No, but it is fun. It's because other topics get thrown in. People come with different perspectives. It's a lot of fun. You know, we obviously want to continue to grow these and get more people in there so that the conversations get even more convoluted, because I think they could be. They can end up being a lot of fun when there's a lot of people in there. So
my favorite part was when we brought on the Pirates fan and I was like asking him about a Jameson Taillon scouting report. And you're like, he's probably never even seen him pitch. I'm like, what? He pitched in 2018. And then we found out the Pirates fan has only been a Pirates fan for two seasons. So he has indeed never seen Jameson Taillon pitch.
But he did go to high school, a rival high school. So he was pitching around that time. So yeah, interesting connections. But that's the other thing, is you get people in that are not just Yankees fans. So you get to either banter back a little bit with them, get some different perspectives. It's just it's a cool vibe. It really is. I think it gives me almost that feeling. You know, originally when we started the show, we said that the premise of the show and the vibe that we always wanted to put out was two guys talking Yankees baseball in a bar. Like that was the vibe that we were putting out to the world. And I think it resonated with a lot of people. You could see it in the reviews on Apple. And when you go into a locker room setting, these audio social apps, you're essentially getting that, right? You're getting the random dude in the bar that you're arguing with about a topic sometimes. It's not just like the WFAN callers, but it's the other guys that are just randomly showing up in here and like joining into your conversation. And I like that energy. There's a different type of energy when that happens because you don't know what's going to happen. a caller comes in, you know the question. You don't know what's going to happen in these. And that's why I think it's I think they're fun.
Well, locker room needs to implement the towel whip, like a towel whip feature, like in the locker, like in a real
towel whip. Okay. taking that very literally.
Yeah, but so the next one we're going to be doing is Thursday around 8 o'clock at night. I know there's no Yankees game going on then, the next televised Yankees game, because for whatever reason, the Yankees don't feel like airing Yankees spring training games. There's a spring training game 6:30 Friday night. To me, that would be the perfect time to air a game, but no, that's not on TV. The next one's not till Sunday afternoon. I don't think that's the best time to do a locker room. I don't think people Sunday at 1 o'clock want to just hop on.
No,
on
I don't think
phone.
So either. So, I think evening is good. We'll see how it does, but yeah, we'll continue to experiment. So 8 o'clock Thursday, today's Wednesday. We're recording this. So tomorrow, 8 o'clock, come on, go download the app.
The link to downloads in the show notes.
Yep.
It's free to download. Obviously you make a quick profile. You can follow Scott and I. It's the same as our Twitter handles on there. So you can easily find us, but even if you don't, we'll be tweeting out the link to it once it goes live. And if you join the MLB group, you'll be notified when we do go live, because there's still not a ton of rooms being created in the MLB group.
Yeah.
So you'll see it. And then you can join, you can come on the show, you can ask us whatever, you can ask questions in the chat feature. So it's really cool. We did mention on that live stream though, that was put out on Monday, the Zach Britton injury. So I don't want to dive too deep into it. One, I guess thing to mention though, that we kind of forgot about, is that Chapman is suspended to start the season because of the run-in with Brasseau. Now, I'm not talking about the home run to end the season that he coughed up to Mike Brasseau.
That was the payment. This is further payment for that.
I feel like MLB should have taken the suspension off after they saw Brasseau just totally own Chapman on the national stage. But no, he will be suspended to start the season for the headhunting incident, whenever that was last season. It's two games, so it's not a major thing. But no Britton to start the season, no Chapman for the first two games of the season. So I guess Chad Green's going to step up into that closer role. Who knows? They might win 9-1 both days, or they might lose 9-1 both days. They might not need a closer, but it's something to talk about.
Yeah, I think it just kind of leads us into a Chapman discussion more so, that, you know, talking about what's come about. And last year he started throwing it. I think he was working on it, but the splitter has been a lot of the topic of discussion when you're talking about Chapman, and even just around the Yankees, is how good it's become. I mean, who said Boone's talking about it as a gross compliment to his fastball and the slider that he's recently developed. But we're looking at Chapman and what he's become, right? We know that the velocity's down a bit. Again, still high 90s, but now everybody's throwing in the high 90s, or every team has five guys throwing in the high 90s, it seems. So it's
97
not like
miles an hour does not even look impressive anymore.
I know, which is crazy.
Gun.
But and that's where he is. I think it's more of the league coming up to him than him going down, really. So he's got to change things up. This has been a topic that you and I have touched on, the long term success and the long term, you know, stayability, if you will. It's like stick-to-itiveness of Chapman and what it will be towards the end of his contract. Because the velocity obviously going to dip. He's got to develop these second and now third pitch. And I think a splitter, just if you think about the way that it operates, you know, coming out of that same arm slot, looking like a fastball. But from everything I've seen, it's about 10 miles per hour different. It's a really good change of speed. And it's got good movement. So he's working on it again in the offseason. And now he's been throwing it with a lot of confidence. And it's very good. I mean, you know it's something good when you have your catcher like laughing about a guy striking out, and then the guy striking out going back to the dugout and like pointing at it and like looking baffled and telling all his teammates about what it was. You know that was a good pitch. So
That this is Aroldis Chapman, and anyone that steps in the box for Aroldis Chapman is looking fastball. So when he throws anything else, it's going to naturally just be fooling to the hitter.
Sure.
But you said third pitch, like, because he has always had a slider. It's always been a bad slider.
It's gotten better over the years.
I know, but I've never felt comfortable whenever Chapman has to go to his slider more because he doesn't have his fastball command that night. That's always a recipe for disaster. He cannot live with his slider. It's just not possible.
Well, no. I mean, I think that's probably true, though, for any late inning reliever. Usually most of those guys are two, maybe a third pitch, but primarily two pitches. If one of those, especially the fastball, if the pitch that you establish yourself with is off and you can't locate it, then that guy's going to have a tough day anyway. So
Dellin Betances was kind of a unicorn in that sense, where if he didn't have his fastball, which happened pretty frequently, he could legitimately live with his curveball for an inning.
I mean, his curveball was probably the best in the league. I mean, it was so devastating. And the fact that he could control it better than he could the, and it was an A plus pitch. You always had to have the fastball in the back of your mind, even if he couldn't locate it. You had to have it in the back of your mind a little bit. So the fact that he could locate that, that curve was just, you know, that was gross. That is a devastating combination.
Right. And if Chapman can get his splitter to, you know, decent levels to work off that fastball, because the fastball splitter is just like, it's like peanut butter and jelly. It's a match made in heaven, because it comes out of the exact same slot and then it falls off the table at the end. Roger Clemens credits the splitter to extending his career. I mean, maybe he should credit all the steroids, but I mean, he does credit the splitter to extending his career.
Steroids help the splitter, apparently.
It's chicken or the egg scenario.
It's interesting, though, the splitter. I would think that the splitter would have had a little more velocity, to be honest, because he's actually changing speeds like he would almost a changeup.
They called this a split change. Yeah. So sometimes splitters are called split fastballs,
right?
And sometimes they're called split changeups.
Which makes sense. So he's probably holding it deeper into his grip, deeper in the hand, so that he's trying to get that motion as much as, you know, the mechanics is as similar as possible, but he's having really good success with it. So I think this is a, not to mention the other thing about a splitter, more ground balls, less balls theoretically going out of the ballpark late in games to lose the seasons, you know, because that's happened a couple times.
I know we talked about this the night that he gave up the home run to Brousseau, but this is now two seasons in a row that Chapman lost the playoffs on a home run.
Right.
And he also had the Cubs thing back when he was with the Cubs. Like, that's three pretty high profile.
Very, as high profile as you can losses. Get, really. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know Chapman is kind of probably one of these guys that just blocks it out. Like, he's a madman. Like, it does not, hopefully it doesn't affect him.
I hope it affects him. I hope it affects him. I hope he thinks about it and tries to get better. I don't want him to think about it the next time out, but I hope it affects him. It better affect him.
But I almost think Chapman, and maybe he's right. His mentality is like, that was a fluke. That was a fluke that I gave up the Brousseau home run. That was a fluke that I gave up the Altuve home run.
See, to me, that gets a little dangerous when you just chalk something up as a fluke or a coincidence.
I agree, but don't you think that's
I should have been better. I didn't execute. There was a reason why I did that. Why that happened.
But don't you think that's his mentality? I mean, that certainly seemed like his mentality with the Altuve one. He was smiling, walking off the field.
Well, that's an instant reaction. That's an instant reaction that we destroy Sonny Gray for, but Chapman, you're like, oh yeah, it's just a sarcastic smile, clearly.
Well, no, some people after all the Astros cheating stuff came out, are like, oh, well, was Chapman smiling because he knows Altuve knew the pitch was coming? Or was he smiling because he's like, I can't believe he hit that pitch?
Yeah, exactly.
Or was he smiling because he's like, crap, I just lost the American League Championship Series. I don't know what to do. A Ricky Bobby moment. I don't know what to do with my hands. Chapman's like, I don't know what to do with my face. And he just smiled as he's walking off.
No, I think it's just a sarcastic instant gut check smile here. I think the biggest thing for what we're talking about this right now, we're talking about his new developed splitter. So clearly he saw
you think
an
that
issue.
Has something to do with the home run.
I think that profile. I don't know if it was directly to that home run or just understanding that he's not fooling people in high pressure situations at that point. So maybe I do have to add a third pitch. That is something that's used more. I need to show something a little bit more. He's making adjustments. I appreciate that. It doesn't seem like he's just sitting back and, you know, being idle about the results and what happened. He's making adjustments. And the fact that the splitter is here and good so far, you know, spring training, obviously, but if we're seeing this splitter as a developed pitch throughout the year and it's being effective, like, good for him. I think I see that as him making an adjustment. That's what a professional should do.
The Brousseau home run came off his fastball. The Altuve home run came off a slider. A bad slider, by the way.
Altuve knew was coming.
Possibly. But people are saying, oh, Altuve must have known that was coming. How could he have been sitting slider in that situation? The slider was belt high.
He hung the shit out of it. It was a bad pitch.
Yeah. So it's like a hanging slider is a batting practice fastball. Even if you don't know it's coming, you can mash the crap out of it.
Yeah.
So I always hated when people were saying, oh, look, that proves Altuve. And who knows? Altuve could have had a buzzer on his nutsack for all we know. Like, we don't know.
And well, I mean, probably, I will believe that that he did know it was coming, whether it was a bad pitch or not. It's also still he was sitting back on that pitch. I've reviewed it. Everybody's dissected that.
You've
a billion
dissected
times.
The film.
The fact that he's sitting back on this pitch, waiting for it, it's clear that he's waiting for it and not just reacting to a hanger, but also ready for that fastball, because your body position, your weight is just in a different place, most likely, if you're trying to guard against that fastball.
It was a 2-0 slider, wasn't it?
I don't remember what the count was.
I think it was 2-0, because I think we talked about, well, once you fall behind 2-0 with the first base open, why don't you just walk them or pitch around them?
Yeah, whatever. I'm not going back into the mechanics of that painful season, but I'll believe that he knew it was coming.
Whatever helps you sleep at night.
Yeah, exactly. A
couple of other injuries to mention in camp. So Miguel Andujar has been shut down. He's dealing with a right wrist issue, muscle strain, and a nerve issue in his right wrist, which apparently he's been feeling since winter ball. I don't know how many times we have to go through this same thing where a guy feels an injury, doesn't tell anyone about it, and then 2.5 months later, it pops up.
I just, some of these injuries, man, you just can't, it's so convenient to say that and be like, oh, why didn't he do something about it? How do we know that he didn't take 2 to 3 days off, understand that it was there, like, and try to put some ice on it? These guys get nicked up, and like a muscle strain and a nerve issue in your hand, they're just going to play through it as they should probably, but it became too much.
Well, so that's the thing. I think it's part of the reason the Yankees get criticized is for the information that they release. If he was dealing with a wrist injury back in winter ball, and part of the information that they released is he took 3 days off when it happened, but that didn't, then okay, fine.
They're under no obligation to release what he's doing in the Dominican in winter ball.
Then why mention it?
Because that's what happened. It's the truth of what happened. He felt something. It was something that has come back. And unfortunately, now it's become a problem. And rather than every other time that we don't hear about it, it just goes away. We don't hear about it at that point. So you know how many times that happens that we're not talking about that because it just goes away and we don't hear about it?
Fair enough. I don't really care to talk about the injuries, the medical staff timelines and the information that they release anymore.
You're
the
learning.
The point I wanted to make with Miguel Andujar is he was already a very long shot to have an impact on this year's team. So now what does this do? Does this just potentially end his Yankees tenure?
Yeah, he's definitely fighting, you know, for roster spots at this point. There's not a true fit for him on the team anyway. Maybe, you know, it's depth at third base. That's how you're looking at it at this point. Especially we'll talk about Gio in a little bit. Potentially sliding over to short on some days. So yeah, you need another third baseman. It does add, you know, that flexibility in that one particular spot. So I still think that, you know, all things healthy, if he were healthy and he's able to get back and hit, it all goes down to his hitting. If he's hitting, I think there's going to be a spot for him on this team in some capacity.
You say that, but
it becomes a numbers game at some point. I know,
but he's still behind so many guys, even if he's hitting, because he's a DH and we've had this conversation a million times. He's like fourth on the DH depth chart.
Yeah, but he can play third base and would play third base. The defense is not that much of a factor to me on a regular season start on a Tuesday, Wednesday. Who gives a shit?
But there's been some really interesting developments as far as backup infielders go, because Gio Urshela made a start at shortstop this week on Tuesday. And that, if the Yankees think Gio Urshela can back up Glaber, that doesn't mean he steps in for a month if Glaber goes down, because I don't think that's realistic. But if he can play shortstop once a week to give Glaber a day off, or come in if Glaber, you know, twists an ankle or something like that, then that opens up the bench spots where Tyler Wade is no longer a lock to make the roster.
True.
And then you have Derek Dietrich, who comes into play because he can play second base and third base. You have Jay Bruce, who has a better shot to make the roster because of his infield, outfield flexibility. So if you have Derek Dietrich, who has not, I mean, he had like one good game in spring training and people are like, oh, this guy must make the roster. I don't know what, I don't like looking at spring training stats, but I haven't really heard him doing anything good since that first week. But people like him. He's a fan favorite already. He's like this year's, I don't even know. He's like, he's the soup du jour of 2021 spring training. He can play a couple of infield spots. DJ LeMahieu obviously can play the infield spot. So if he needs to shift over to third base, he can do that. But I just think this Gio thing is very interesting with how they can construct the roster.
I agree. I think it changes the game. Look, we had this as a side note with them talking about Gio potentially playing short. And, you know, one of the reasons why I think it was brought up earlier, you know, even before spring training, we mentioned it, but, you know, he's played over there when the shift is on as well. So he's got experience sliding over there. He's just a good glove in the first place. And I think they're confident with him, you know, not really giving up too much. The range maybe, but we're talking about Gleyber range. It's not that much.
Yeah, I was going to say, does Gio have that much worse range at shortstop than Gleyber?
Well, no, but I think that your range also will get knocked a little bit just from instincts, not getting the reps, not playing the position as much, like getting a good read off the bat from short to third to short. He doesn't have the reps there to have that same instinct as any other shortstop. I think that's just played there more often and more times.
I mean, do you think the Yankees will actually do this though? I still don't believe it.
I think they will do it. I think that they're looking for an option where if there's a ball hit, I don't know, 7 feet one way, 7 feet the other way, if the ball is hit and it's within range to get a glove on it, he would be just fine making a play. And I think they're comfortable with that.
I don't doubt that, especially for the regular season. I don't doubt that. I don't know if they, I hope, because Tyler Wade, all he does is he can play defense at shortstop. That's his role on the team if he makes the team. But I don't know if they're ready to give that up yet. I don't know if they believe in them what they're testing enough yet to say, we don't need Tyler Wade on this roster. I'll believe it when I see it.
Look, I think, you know, I've made the argument for Tyler Wade for a long time, just as far as the way that he can fit under this roster. And it's very much in a role player position that just doesn't come into play that often early in the season. I think, you know, a Tyler Wade for the other things, the defense, the running the bases, like the flexibility on that side, could come into play later in the season as a bench guy that has a very specific role within a game. That's what he is. He's the last guy on the bench that gives you some flexibility on defense, gives you some flexibility on the base path. That's what he is. Maybe he can lay a bunt down. Who knows? My point is, he's not an everyday player. He doesn't need to be an everyday player during the regular season. If he can be, I don't know how many options he has left. I'm trying to look at it. I can't find it, but he's got to be coming up on them, to be honest.
Who are you talking about?
Tyler Wade.
He's
got to be getting close.
I don't know.
But that's a factor. And if he's in the minor leagues getting everyday reps at shortstop, like that's probably a good thing, honestly, for the New York Yankees as a whole, for when he needs to come up, if he ends up coming up late in the season, helping in a smaller capacity. Like that would be a positive thing for him.
They're going to have four bench spots, 26 man roster, 13 pitchers, 13 bench players, unless they're carrying an extra bench spot to start the season. I just don't see that happening. But so there's eight guys I think are in contention for those four spots. Higgy, he's a lock. He's the backup catcher, so I don't even want to talk about that. Gardner, he's also a lock. I mean, he's just going to make the roster. You see he played right field?
I did. That's awesome. It's great. Give him flexibility. That means get off Clint Frazier's nuts.
So that means you have to pick two of these next six players that are going to make the roster. Jay Bruce, Derek Dietrich, Tyler Wade, Mike Talkman, Mike Ford, Estrada.
Yeah, and I can tell you who they're going to be.
Okay, tell me.
They're going to be Jay Bruce and Mike Talkman.
Interesting. So they're going... I did not expect you to say Talkman. So
I think they want the depth in the outfield.
That means there's only the... There is no backup infielder other than Jay Bruce, and he can only play first base. Now that there's guys that can shift around, but that, do you see what I'm saying? That doesn't work because you have DJ, Gleyber, Gio starting. If one of those guys goes down, how do you fill out the infield if you need to plug in an infielder?
He goes down within the game or like the next
day? Yeah, within the game.
DJ LeMahieu can play literally every position on the diamond, so you're not going to have too much of an issue.
Gleyber Torres needs to come out of the game in the fifth inning.
Yep.
What happens?
Urshela goes to shortstop.
Yeah.
LeMahieu goes to third and Bruce goes to first.
Who goes to second?
Hang on. I'm looking around.
There's no one. They're going to need another backup infielder.
So you're saying, so then, okay.
It's not Mike Tauchman. It's Derek Dietrich or Tyler Wade.
Yeah, you're right. So where's, so it's either Bruce or Tauchman then, because Bruce, I mean, Bruce can play a corner outfield. So does Gardner playing right field now spell the end of Tauchman? I just have a very difficult time thinking that they're going to give up on Tauchman. Or like you mentioned, maybe he's a late spring trade.
Yeah, because I think they love Tauchman. I think they think he's the outfield Gio Urshela. But where does he play on this roster now that Gardner is back?
They're going to be forced to either sign Bruce or not, obviously, because he's got that option. So he's either going to be an impact bat on this team, and they believe that, and they doesn't matter during the regular season, probably not as much, but they're essentially making a decision for what he could be late in the year into the postseason now. Right. I mean, that's essentially what we're doing here, because you have to make that decision. You're forced to make that decision. Otherwise you lose him probably to another roster.
Yeah. I mean, I think the easy decision is tell Jay Bruce, we're not going to put you on the roster. We're going to release you now so you can have the best chance to get on with another team. That's the easy decision.
But again, that affects what the Yankees could be at the end of the year, having an impact lefty bat.
I know.
And that's a huge risk. Not giving up that player.
That's not a huge risk.
I think it's a risk. I think that Jay Bruce could be a big
risk.
Piece.
It's a minor risk.
When you start, again, I said this before, the regular season Jay Bruce impact, who cares? That's not what we're talking about.
Another Jay Bruce at the trade deadline. There's going to be 7 Jay Bruces to pick up at the trade deadline.
I mean, if you believe that there's going to be 7 Jay Bruces that have the ability to have a production like him, then okay, but I don't know if that's true. You're risking
not legitimately 7, but there is always a Jay Bruce type that gets traded at the deadline.
You can make a trade. Yeah, you can see who's still out there, you know, taking BP at their cage in their basement, you know.
Yeah.
But Jay Bruce is a guy that has shown and has proven the ability to be an impact bat, like a significant impact bat. And all signs are saying guys love him. Natural fit in the clubhouse. He's a Yankee guy. They love him. Feels like he's been there for years. Veteran presence.
Sure.
My feeling about these veteran presence guys on a team like them. This. And I had some pushback on Twitter the last time I mentioned this about this being a younger team at this point. And I understand that it's not as young of a team as it was 2 years ago, but it's still a young team. It's still a team that needs to get over the hump. And
we're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And Jay Bruce is a guy that can help that.
Yeah, and maybe they surprise us all and only carry 12 pitchers to start the season. But
I could see that too.
But they never do that.
You're right, but they could.
They love the bullpen arms. They love the bullpen bullets because they fly through them so quickly.
Dealing with some guys, I mean, so you have guys that do have the ability to go some, you know, length in the bullpen as well. You have a number of guys who can do that. So you could theoretically get away with that for a bit.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. I just think the versatility, I mean, I don't see how Mike Tauchman fits on the roster.
I just have a difficult time saying they're going to get rid of Mike Tauchman unless it's a late season trade.
I hear you. late spring training trade.
But yeah.
I hear you. Both are true. I don't see how Mike Tauchman fits on this roster, and I don't see them giving him up.
Right.
Like, both of those things are true, and I don't know which one's going to break first.
Yeah, I guess it depends on how they feel about Jay Bruce. That's a key piece of this.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals? We've all gone through a lot over the past year plus with COVID. Well, BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online. There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in your area, and it's available worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living happier today. You can visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily to see for yourself. Visit BetterHelp.com/Bronx21. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, and join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of experienced professionals. We have a great special offer for our listeners. You can get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/Bronx21. One more time, BetterHelp.com/Bronx21.
One other quick injury to mention. Higgy was experiencing some soreness in his side, but he says he's going to be back by the weekend. It's not a big deal. What is a potentially a big deal, though, is if Higgy does have an injury because Chirinos is out, who's the backup catcher? I mean, so that we were kind of going down the roster this morning, like, okay, is it Mike Bro? Max McDowell, Josh Bro, like who steps into that backup catcher role? I mean, they're going to go find Eric Kratz wherever the hell he is these days and re-sign him if Higgy does go down. So I think that was worth mentioning. But the thing I do want to talk about, a couple of things around the league. First of all, Bryce Harper is not an analytics guy. He's anti-nerd stats.
Makes me like him more. The interview is... It's pretty good.
Did you listen to it?
I'm a GED guy. Yeah, that's good. I made it to sophomore year in high school, but I'm, so, I'm look at me now. Basically, I'm doing okay.
Yeah, it was it's a funny clip. He was doing a Zoom interview. He said, "I don't really like stats. I don't really like any of that stuff. Exit velocity. I don't care about that either. I'm more of exit hits. I want guys to get hits. I want guys to perform. I don't understand any of that stuff. I'm a GED guy. I don't really understand any of that." In the middle of him stammering, he's like, "I don't understand. What is this? W something.
Yeah. That was my favorite part of it.
Do you know what the ironic part of it is?
Shut up,
though.
Get in the locker.
Is that as Scott Boras was like going around shopping Bryce Harper, like he had all of these nerd stats ready to go on Bryce Harper. Harper's probably sitting there in these meetings, like on his phone playing Candy Crush. Like, what the hell are you talking about, dude?
Yeah, I mean that, but I like that. That like those numbers tell you what a guy does, but the guy just goes see ball, hit ball, and that's okay too.
I'm more of exit hits. It's such a Bryce Harper statement to make. It doesn't make sense. Those words together don't make sense, but I understand fully what he's saying. So yeah, anti-nerd Bryce Harper. Very funny.
See ball, hit ball, destroy ball. That's my job. If I get on base, that's a good thing. If I hit home runs, that's a good thing.
Well, then maybe that's why the Yankees didn't sign him, because in the meeting with Brian Cashman.
Not as much of a nerd guy.
I don't give a crap about your nerd stats. I'm going to give all this analytics department a swirly. And Brian Cashman's like, okay, I guess we're not signing Bryce Harper.
Damn it. Makes me want him way more now.
The other thing I want to talk about, this caught my attention. So I saw this on Twitter, the rules that MLB will be testing in the minor leagues. A number of just... whatever bullshit rules that you don't care about, except this one. Double A. The defensive team must have a minimum of 4 players on the infield, each of whom must have both feet completely in front of the outer boundary of the infield dirt. This is talking about getting rid of those shifts. So you can still have 3 players on the right side or left side of second base, but they all have to be on the infield dirt. And as you know, that's a big deal. Not so much for if you're shifting on a right-handed hitter, because a lot of times, even when you're shifting on a right-handed hitter, the the guy in the shortstop hole is still pretty close to the infield because that's such a long throw.
Yeah.
But it really comes into play for left-handed hitters because they play 30 feet into right field sometimes.
So this has no impact on the New York Yankees.
Well, I mean, it's double A anyway.
I know. But I'm just saying there's no left-handed bat to pull the ball Hicks. Very much. Yeah.
Hicks.
This is Mark Teixeira was like, why wasn't this rule implemented?
But I like that they're doing this. And there's also the caveat in here that they could test requiring when a pitch is thrown, people to be on either side of second base. You must have two defenders on each side of second base, which is where I would like to see it go because that completely takes away the shift. But this, I think for left-handed hitters is a pretty big impact.
I agree. Look, we've been vocal about the dumb testing of rules they do in the minor leagues. This particular one, you know, maybe it's the get off my lawn aspect of how I think, but I liked the fact that there are more hits in a game, and you know this. It feels like an offsides rule.
You're like Bryce Harper. He likes hits.
I like hits. I like exit hits. But it feels like an offsides rule type of thing, where you're just you're allowing more offense to happen and people playing their position within the constraints of what that position should be and normally has been and just currently is. So I like it. I do. I like it a lot. I like it, and I want them to implement it. I hope it goes well. Because if they get rid of the shift, baseball is just going to be more fun.
Yeah. I mean, I think
it's as simple as that.
We've talked at nauseam about why we want to reduce the shift, and it all gets back to making the game a more entertaining product. Like, that's the bottom line. How do we make baseball entertaining to watch? And I think that
what's crazy also is that, like, I don't think this is the natural path of thought here, but this will actually speed up games. Maybe not in the very short term, but I think at the sample size, no, because there's going to be more balls in play. There's going to be more ground balls because people aren't going to be swinging for I bet launch velocity, you start to see a dip in that as well. If this becomes a instituted rule over the years, you're going to start seeing guys spray the ball more and put more bat to ball, looking for contact, looking to get on base, looking to take the extra base. There's going to be movement on the base path. But there's going to be more outs because of that. There's going to be less strikeouts, less home runs most likely, and more balls in play, which means outs can happen. Ball in play, out recorded. That's a great thing to see because that does speed up the game.
I think it does. It will help speed up the game a little bit because walks take a long time, strikeouts take a long time, home runs take a long time. So, but I think the biggest difference is that, okay, it speeds up the game four, five, 6 minutes, whatever. That's not a huge impact. But the game is more entertaining when you're watching for those 3 hours and 20 minutes. More stuff is happening in those 3 hours and 20 minutes rather than not much happening in 3 hours. It's totally different. The game feels faster because more shit is happening.
Right. That's exactly the case, right? You look at a football game and you're spending 3 hours watching a football game. There's a 1 o'clock game. There's a 4 o'clock game, a long ass halftime in between, but there's things happening on every play. So you're watching like action, you know, often. And That is part of the perception is part of the reality here. And when you see more action, it's just going to be a better product. I think people will be happier watching baseball and get more into it when you see doubles in the gap, base hits, guy taking a first to third on a ground ball up the middle. Doesn't happen that often anymore.
So we do have some stats that were pulled by intern Bob, who was on the locker room, and he will be on the next regular show. This was his first homework assignment for the specific.
I could
podcast.
Really use him right now, looking up the amount of options that Tyler Wade has.
Why don't you DM him real quick? So the fifth starter battle is kind of heating up. Devi Garcia and Domingo Herman. Devi Garcia's spring training stats so far: 8 innings, 5 hits, 3 runs, 2 walks, 10 strikeouts. Domingo Herman: 9 innings, 5 hits, 0 runs, 1 walk, 13 strikeouts. I don't want to make this a Domingo Herman domestic violence conversation. Let's just talk about baseball.
At some point, we have to talk about baseball, right? With him, if he's on this team. So our thoughts on him off the field are pretty clear.
When we're talking about baseball, I think far and away, Domingo Herman will get this fifth starter job to start the season.
Yeah, I agree. I think it just makes a ton of sense.
Because Domingo Herman has already pitched in the major leagues. He's 29 years old. This is a kind of you either got to prove it that we it's worth it that we kept you and kept through all this shit, or we're going to move on from you. And this is your opportunity to prove it. Whereas Devi Garcia, he only threw six games in the quote major leagues last year during the pandemic season. He had a one inning start in the playoffs. Putting him in AAA and saying you're going to start 9 or 10 games in AAA to start the season, is that's chalked up to development.
Chalk it up to development. Be ready when the call comes, though, because you're probably
when
the first
someone
guy
goes
up.
Down with an injury. When Devi Garcia will get called
when up. Someone goes down, because it's inevitable. You're gonna be the first guy up. Great. That's a great thing to have. That's a great thing to have. I mean, either one of these guys in AAA waiting to come up to be the next guy starting for a potential missed start. Not a bad situation here on the mound. Like, both are effective, and Devi Garcia is fun and exciting, but he's got options, and it makes sense to keep him in there to develop more.
I think you just throw Herman to the fire.
Yeah.
You're going to get a start every fifth day, put up or shut up. And you got to have a hard line with him too. All right. Couple mailbag questions before we wrap up here. This first one is from Chris Mack. This was one that we did not get to last week, but I thought it was an interesting question. He says, who do you see making the biggest step forward and biggest step backwards in 2021? And he asks for position players and pitchers. So these are three guys on each that I jotted down. You can disagree with me. And the way I'm thinking about this is, like, Clint Frazier took a huge step forward in 2021. Who can pull a Clint Frazier or in 2020? Who can pull a Clint Frazier in 2021? And I think Gary Sanchez is the clear and away favorite to do that. I mean, he had a 64 OPS plus last year. Can he get back to being the 125 OPS plus guy? I think Gleyber Torres needs to rebound from a pretty mediocre age 23 season, even though it was a shortened season. It was bad. It was a bad season for Gleyber Torres.
Yeah, he will fully admit that too.
Yeah. And I also think Jordan Montgomery, full year removed from Tommy John surgery, had a good playoff start. This is a, can you build off of your 2018 season in which you were one of the best rookie pitchers in baseball?
This is why this team is exciting and scary at the same time, because there are a lot of guys that we could list in this first category of candidates for biggest step forward.
Who else you got?
I could also throw in Aaron Hicks. Definitely. I could throw in Aaron Hicks as our starting. No, because if he's hitting in the three spot with the other guys around him consistently, if he's staying healthy, like there's the ability for him to put up some good numbers. Like, there
health,
could be
okay,
the
so
ability to stay
is
there.
The real health is, I guess, the thing with Hicks. If he can play 135 or 140 games, then
that's
fine,
a huge deal. That's a big help for what the Yankees do.
Performance wise, I think we know what Hicks is.
I also think that he also, has been talking about this injury that he had a shoulder injury last year, and it was affecting the way he played. So there's definitely room for him to get much better. I think Clint Frazier, while he showed what he could do last year, now that he's stepping into, starting left field role full time, there's even more that he could build on. And I do expect him to have a really good year and take another step from what we saw last year. I think that he's got the ability to become a more complete hitter, to use all sides of the field and really become, one of those guys that can alter the way that pitchers approach this lineup. I really believe this. We're not at our bold predictions yet, but he could be an X factor in the sense that he's a right-handed bat, but he's got the ability and the bat speed to really spray the ball if he wanted to.
Who are you talking about?
Clint Frazier.
Okay, I think, but no, he already took a step forward. What are you talking about?
I said he could take a bigger step forward now that he's starting role. I think there's more for him, from him to go forward. I think there's a lot of potential up and down this entire lineup, but him changing his approach a bit and being able to be a more complete hitter will, I think, affect the way that pitchers attack this lineup. If you can have a right-handed guy besides DJ being able to spray the ball a little bit, I really do think that's a big deal here. The guys that you mentioned, I think Gary Sanchez is the number one guy to put on this list easily. Torres didn't have a good year. And then Montgomery, it's coming back from an injury. So, we just got to see him hold up. I do agree with you. Luke Voit probably has the biggest opportunity to take a step back. But
he led the league in home runs last year. Like, is that legit? Is Luke Voit one of the best first basemen in baseball, or is he kind of a flash in the pan? I think we're going to find that out.
Everything that he has done since he's come here has been, he's one of the better first basemen besides when he had a sports hernia. That was the time when he was injured. It was clear that he was injured, and we saw the, we saw him suffer because of that injury. Every other moment that he's been in, he's looked very real.
So, stats wise, he has been a top five production offensive first baseman in baseball since he came to the Yankees in 2018. It was a couple months in 2018. It was a couple months in 2019, aside from the injury, and it was a shortened pandemic season. So I still think he needs to prove it.
I guess so. At some point, you have to. I'm not going to chalk him up to the pandemic, and I actually think that the injury was really the only thing that you're looking at for a fall off, and I can lean on that. I could say, well, he really hasn't shown that he's been a player that's sub what he was last year, besides an injured time when he, you know, could barely swing a bat or it hurt to swing all the way through. He was just dealing with an injury. So, I mean, I could go to the other side of that and just blame the injury for any kind of negative performance. So there's a lot of guys that have the ability to show more, not that many guys that have a huge opportunity to step back, because there's kind of like a disclaimer for everybody on this team. Almost DJ LeMahieu, I guess he's the only
one.
No.
What about Gio? I think Gio is a candidate kind of like Luke Voit.
Yeah.
But he's 133 OPS plus with the Yankees. That's elite.
That's what I'm saying. Like, he hasn't shown it. Does he have the ability? Because his name is Gio Urshela. So that's the reason.
Yes. That's the only reason. I mean, it's a part of me, and maybe it's unfair because his name is Gio Urshela and his name is Luke Voit, and they acquired them for nothing. Is it for real? I still need to know. I don't know if I'll ever believe it.
The other side of this is you could look at Clint Frazier in the other way and say that, okay, he showed it last year, showed that step up. What if he regresses from there? What if he actually doesn't show to be that guy? And then now there's Brett Gardner, you know, patrolling left field a lot more often because Frazier is not actually continuing what he did last year. Potential there too.
That could happen.
I mean, can make an argument for both ways, probably every person on the team at this point.
I mean, at least Clint Frazier was a top draft pick and a top prospect throughout his entire minor league career.
So that's a candidate for a big step back, no?
My point is that, like, when he took that step forward last year, we weren't like, oh, wow, that was surprising. It was like, finally, he's living up to his potential.
I'm going to definitely say that I was surprised with the outfield play. There's no doubt about it. But I can't believe he's actually camped under that ball and also catching it.
Well, is his eyes open? Awesome. No, but don't you understand what I'm saying? Like, no one's surprised. If Clint Frazier turns into a 10-year MLB vet and makes a couple all-star teams, no one's going to be like, that came out of nowhere.
I agree with that. But I think that's you look up and down the lineup. The only two guys where you're saying that came out of nowhere for anything positive is Luke Voit and Gio Urshela.
Exactly my point.
But that also, does that mean that they're the candidate for the biggest step back?
Yes, that okay. Does. And the last guy I put on the list was Chad Green. Do you realize this is his sixth season with the Yankees?
Yeah, it feels like he's been around for a minute.
Obviously, he burst onto the scene in the bullpen in 2017. But he's had his ups and downs the last couple of years. So we've seen guys flame out in the bullpen. And that's, I guess, my only concern is that is Chad Green going to flame out? I hope he doesn't. Because he's the number three guy in the bullpen, number one to start the season.
He's definitely, top three most trusted guys. And I mean, it's hard to put Chapman even in that mix because he's dedicated to one inning. So when you have a fire that's happening in a perfect world, it's Britton or Chad Green.
All right, one more mailbag question. It's a quick one. It's from Peter Marks, and this was sent in a few years ago. He starts off by talking about how
this was sent in a few years ago,
few weeks ago. I had a baby 5 weeks ago, so it feels like a few years. So he's just talking about how he was in Boston during the Bucky Dent game. Anyway, I've got a partial resolution to one of the sore points that you both mentioned. Instant replay and overturning calls. A very simple and fair solution. Teams should not be allowed to view any electronic replays before challenging. Umpires have to make the calls instantaneously, and teams should challenge based on what they saw, with only the most blatant missed calls likely being overturned. Whether it's 5 or 10 or 20 seconds to challenge, they should not be allowed to watch slow motion replays before they challenge the call. So definitely cut down on time and game disruptions. Also, on the new 2020 rules, I hate the runner on second base. But anyway, okay, so his idea that Boone can't put up his hand, wait, hold on, wait, call down to whoever's down in the tunnel, Watch on Instant Replay. Watch on Yesmo, presented by Hyundai. Oh, okay, yeah, I want to challenge it. No, none of that.
I agree. It should be a very much shorter window. You should be able to, you should not be able to look at the replay and be like, yeah, slow-mo, that guy is out clearly. You're getting the same slow-mo as the guy that's going to look at it to overturn it. So you already know the result.
Then at that point, but then still they don't do it. So it's like, oh, well, what the hell slow-mo were you looking at in Chelsea?
No, I agree. If it's one of those calls, you're like, that guy was safe. Definitely. He's telling me, I trust my guy. You challenge the call.
Well, you never should trust the guy because the guy's always
making that decision to trust the guy or not to trust the guy. That's your call. But you're not looking at the Yesmo and identifying that, oh, yes, he is confirmed correct. Now let's challenge it and confirm my already confirmed. I already know what's going to happen here. So let's just make this a, what's the point in that? There's no point in that.
Yeah, I think that they got to go one of two ways. If they do go this way, I think you'll see less manager challenges because they don't want to take the risk and they want to save it for something blatant later in the game. So that could be a positive. Or you just take the power of challenging completely away from the manager and you have an umpire up in the booth that when there's a call wrong, he quickly calls down and said, hey, bozos, you missed that call. Overturn it. No challenging.
That's possible. That's now you're looking at a slight delay though for every single potential close call, which, you know, at the end of the day, this is what we go to football.
It's a couple seconds. I mean, by the time the next guy is up to bat, you'll know.
At the end of the day, what is the reason why do we all want instant replay to be in something in a game is to get the call right. That's it. Just get the call right. That's all anybody wants. So if it's coming from the booth or coming from a guy that's up there, you know, reviewing every single play, who gives a shit? You're right. Is it because the guy had a challenge in his pocket still, or they challenged it after looking at slow-mo? No. It should already be looked at. If it's wrong, change it.
Yeah. I'm with you. All right. I think that's going to do it. That's going to do it for this week. Anything else you want to mention quickly before we wrap up?
Tomorrow night, just to reiterate, tomorrow night is we're going to do a locker room at 8:00 East Coast. And I work with so many people in the Pacific Coast now. So I have to say East Coast. And do math. It's annoying. My brain gets overworked, which I don't appreciate. But yeah.
What is that in mountain time?
It's one less than that, I think. So add two, subtract two, carry the one. And then, oh, by the way, Arizona doesn't participate in daylight savings.
Yeah.
And place some parts of Mexico, which I've realized, do it later than everybody else. It's all.
What?
What are we doing here? What are we doing? Just everybody get on the same page. Figure this out. It's too much.
All right. We'll talk to you guys.
How's being a dad going first? You got to give a quick dad report.
It's going. So apparently he's going through this mental leap right now. I don't know if you guys got into all this. Leanne's very into like tracking on this app when babies are going to be going through these mental leaps. And supposedly at basically
the, is this the same app that tells you like your baby's a grapefruit, your baby's a grape?
I don't know.
It's like the same,
to be honest,
I hear that same woman, the one who does the voiceover. I've heard her on commercials. I've like, whoa, that's so weird. I'm seeing you on like a Netflix show. It was very, yeah.
So I don't know what app this is, but supposedly yesterday, he was going through a mental leap, and some things that we might start to notice is like when he actually might make eye contact and lock it versus like eyes darting around. And it's like, you're kind of always trying to meet his eyes and like, he's kind of staring distantly. So he might start to recognize some things. So I'm looking forward to when he recognizes me.
And these are these are like general ranges and when you can expect these types of things to happen.
Supposedly it's like specific days tracking back to the due date of the baby. And like 99% of babies hit them at the same time.
That's weird.
Yeah. And like, I'm just hoping when he does make eye contact.
So now you have another thing to have anxiety about if he's not locking eyes with you.
Yeah.
Like that's all that's doing.
When he's recognizing me, he's not like, oh shit, I know that guy. I got to pee on him.
Yeah. I locked eyes with that guy. Never again. I saw the devil. Never again.
But you got to see him briefly on one of our calls this morning.
Yes.
I'll have to get him on another call.
Nice.
Maybe we can introduce him to Kemp at some point, and then they can just take this podcast from us.
There you go. All right. Well, yeah, that's it. I wanted the old report, but we will have a Bob on the next call. So excited about that. Bob's going to be playing a role in the show, and yeah, it's going to be fun.
Good stuff. Keep your mailbags coming, all that good stuff. Join the locker room Thursday, 8 p.m. Talk to you then.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.